Morning. The topic of truth and peace is always a fascinating one. We generally assume that we say honesty is the best policy. And this seems to be a notion and a policy that emanates from the Torah. We're told in Parshas Mishpatim, Midvar Sheker Tirchach, we should say far away from falsehood. So it does seem to indeed be the case that we maintain that honesty is the best policy. So it's a little bit surprising to find that there seems to be a few exceptions to this rule, or at least one exception. The Gemara Maseches Yevamos should be in the Marmakomos sheet, and Daf Nun Zayin discusses a pasuk that we'll read in this week's parsha, and parsha is Vayechi, and at the very end of Sefer Bereishis, after the dust has kind of settled with Yosef and his brothers, so the brothers relate to Yosef that Avicha Tziva, that your father gave a commandment that you should know before he died, that you should forgive us. Which is a beautiful thought. It's a wonderful sentiment for Yaakov to have issued. The problem is, it doesn't seem to be true. It doesn't seem like it actually happened. So it's terrible. So the brother said something false, we should condemn that. We should expect the Gemara to criticize such behavior. Says the Gemara, it's okay. It's acceptable. That it's mutter l'shanos v'fnei ha-shalom. That if the motivation is peace, is keeping shalom, so then it is permissible to what? To l'shanos. Right? We could translate that right now as to lie. May not be the best translation. Literally translates as to change. The Hebrew word for lying would really be l'shaker. Perhaps it's significant that the Gemara doesn't use that word. We'll come back to that point. But for now, let's translate it as to lie. Says the Talmud, it's permissible to lie for the sake of peace. Okay, that's a surprise, but fine. Maybe that's the case. Then the Gemara goes on to tell us a different opinion. Conflicting opinion. The first opinion had said that it's mutter l'shanos, that it's permissible to lie under such circumstances. The second opinion, Rabbi Loi, disagrees and says, not true. It's not mutter l'shanos v'fnei ha-shalom, it's not permissible to lie. It's a mitzvah l'shanos. It's an obligation. If we say that it's permissible, we create the impression that it's an option, that it's permissible to do this, it's also permissible not to do this. So the second opinion maintains that's not true, that if one is confronted with such a situation, one is obligated to lie for the sake of peace. And the Gemara gives a proof for this as well. It's not from Chumash, it's from Nach, story involving Shmuel HaNavi. And Shmuel was charged with a mission by the Ribono Shel Olam. God said to him, I'm giving you the job, you should be like the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. You get to swear in the new president. You get to anoint the new king. It was a young man named David who was destined to become a David HaMelech, and Shmuel gets to anoint him. So it's a big honor, but Shmuel doesn't want the job. Because, as he complains to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he says, there already is a king. His name is Shaul, and he has a shtickle of temper. And if he sees me anointing another king, he's not going to like it so much. He says, V'shama Shaul, Baharagani, Shaul's going to hear what's happening. He's going to kill me. So God, I'll have to come to that. So God says, no problem. I've got a plan. Take an animal with you. And then when you happen to run into Shaul, and Shaul says, Shmuel, where are you going? So you say, well, I have an animal, so clearly I'm bringing a korban. So all I'm doing, I certainly would be anointing any of the king when you're around. Don't worry. Don't get angry with me. And that'll solve the problem. That'll take care of it. So here you have a situation where it's not that somebody said something not true and the Gemara says afterwards, it's okay, it's justifiable. But what happened here, that God said, here's the plan, here's what you do. So apparently, says the Gemara, you see from there, not only mutter, but mitzvah. Now, a question could be asked, we heard a question was asked over here, that maybe this isn't the greatest proof that you can lie for the sake of shalom. Right, you could argue that this is not a situation of shalom, it's a situation of pikuach nefesh, that Shmuel complains that he's afraid of dying, that Shaul's going to kill him. So that's a question that Rishonim and the later Sfarim talk about. They have various suggestions. And there's a sefer called Orech Mesharim. The sefer is a beautiful little sefer. If you look at the title, without Nekudos, it looks like it says Shulchan Aruch Lamdus. But you look at it more clearly, it's a Shulchan Aruch Lamidos. It's a Shulchan Aruch of traits and of qualities. So he has discussions about Emes and Shalom and the like. So he discusses this and he suggests as follows that, and the Rishonim who already start this point, that we have a klal, Shluche Mitzvah Nizokin, that somebody who's on a mitzvah mission is protected. So we know that it's not such an absolute principle. We can all think of exceptions to the rule. The Gemara discusses when it applies, when it doesn't apply. But one can assume that you have a one-time mission to a specific individual directed at you to do this. So chances are that he would be physically protected. Even though he himself was afraid, he thought that he was vulnerable, but his physical life would have been protected. So what remains is the issue of machlokas, the emotional issue, that there's going to be personal strife, and God's derech, his style, is not to affect people's emotions. So therefore, we need an external plan in order to address the shalom issue. So that was this slight fudging of the truth. And then the Gemara goes on to say, the ultimate in self-defense, when you normally want to defend what you do, and you say, it's not just me, everyone does it. So here the Gemara gives the ultimate, it's not just me, Afakarish Baruch Hu Atzmo Asakein, God himself does it. How do we know that? It's a pasuk in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, where the Torah tells us that Sarah doesn't believe that she's going to have a child, and her response is, I'm going to have a child, do you have any idea how old my husband is? Do you think that's Shaykh? So one pasuk later, God himself relates this back to Avram, and it comes out differently. It comes out, it's a little unclear, but it basically comes out that Sarah is skeptical about the idea of having a child. She said, old. And it makes it sound as if she said that she was old, when really she said that Avram was old. So Gemara seems to understand that. There's a discussion, they're showing him of exactly what it means, why I present it as being somewhat vague. But the Gemara seems to understand that as an example of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being Mishana Bifnei HaShalom, to keep the peace between a man and a wife. So how do we relate to this idea? Right? Did we not normally assume that honesty is the best policy? Midvar Sheker Tircha. So how exactly does it work out that we have this exception? What's the mechanics? How does it happen that this principle of Midvar Sheker Tircha does not seem to be the end of the story? So there are perhaps two basic approaches one could take. You could come at it from two different angles. But on the one hand, one could say that what we have here is a values clash. There is a pasuk in Sefer Zechariah. I think you can safely say it's the most famous pasuk in Sefer Zechariah. That's it's relevant to this week. This week we have Asar Beteves. So the pasuk that refers to the four Ta'anesim in Sefer Zechariah tells us that ultimately, Tzom HaRaviv, Tzom HaChamishi, that all these four fast days will ultimately be L'sasim U'L'simcha. And then the pasuk ends off, V'ha'emes V'ha'shalom Mehavu. Roughly translated, peace and truth are beloved. So one could suggest that this pasuk is telling us that essentially we have two core values. Here for show and tell, we have two pillars. Right? So we have a pillar of emes, and we have a pillar of shalom. And we'll try to live our lives guided by these two pillars. And ideally, we'll show perfect loyalty to both of these values. But what happens if you have a clash? What if you have a situation where one is going to have to be compromised? That if you're going to tell the absolute truth, you're not going to have shalom. And if you're going to maintain shalom, you're not going to have absolute truth. So then, what should you do? So if it really is the case that they're equal, that the two values are 50-50, so then it would seem that a responsible adult could choose either one. And that could be the position of mutter l'shanos b'fnei hashalom. You could say it's acceptable to sacrifice truth for peace, but implying also that it's acceptable not to. It's acceptable to go the other route and to decide you're going to emphasize truth over peace, because they're two equivalent values, it's 50-50. Now, what if you don't believe it's mutter, but you believe it's a mitzvah? How would you come to that conclusion? So then you could say, well, I could use the same explanation. You could say that it's basically a values clash, but it's not 50-50. And that shalom is more important. And that's a whole discussion many of the Sfarim have, trying to figure out in general the Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos, which mention the two together, Shalom and Emes. Some of the commentaries of Maram Shik and others try to figure out which one is more important. Jor HaMizrach, that old editor of the old version of the Or HaMizrach with Shapansky, has a whole article about this, about truth and peace, which one is more important. Some of the Chassidish Sfarim, they point to the fact that there's the Gemara Maseches Shabbos that says, Chosamo Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emesu, that the seal of God is truth. So if that's the case, they'll say, okay, so truth is a pretty big deal. That seems to be our highest value. So they point out, yes, but the Gemara says earlier in Maseches Shabbos, she was learning Shabbos this year, the first parak. So earlier in Maseches Shabbos, the Gemara says that the word Shalom should not be said in an unclean place, because Shalom is one of the names of God. So if that's the case, so yes, truth is the seal of God, but Shalom is the name of God. The name beats the seal. The seal is just representational. Name is the essence, and maybe Shalom is greater than Emes. Okay, so there's a whole discussion, proofs back and forth. Maybe we could say that it's not really 50-50. They're both important values, but Shalom wins. So therefore, you don't have the right to sacrifice Shalom for truth. You have to go the other way, and you'll say, Mitzvah l'shanos b'fnei HaShalom. Or, alternatively, you could say that no, it's not really a values clash. That we have to figure out that a little bit more accurately, what exactly are the parameters of the prohibition of Sheker? What exactly are we talking about? When the Torah says, Midvar Sheker Tichach, what exactly is it prohibited? And on the one hand, it sounds like it's a broad statement against lying, but the language is unusual. Tirchak is not the normal language the Torah uses for a prohibition. The Gemara says there are four different words the Torah uses to prohibit something. Yishamar lav pen va'al, and tirchak is not one of them. So what does it mean when it says stay far away? It's a difficult word to interpret. You have the whole range of interpretations. There are those who say, like the Sefer HaChinuch, that it's a more extreme kind of yisur. And meirov ti'uvo, it's so distasteful to lie that the Torah wasn't satisfied to say don't. It said don't even come close. And others interpret it the opposite way and say it's a less absolute prohibition. And that normally when the Torah prohibits something, it says don't. And here it says avoid. So it yields all types of interpretations in between, including the famous story when a great rabbi once wrote a haskama to a sefer, and he wrote a little bit of a note at the top of the page, and he signed his name at the very bottom. And they asked him, why do you sign his name at the bottom of the page? He said, Mitzvar Sheker Tirchak, right? We don't know what stay away from. You see? Maybe it means sign your name far away from the words. So the language is very ambiguous. So the truth is, you find in the Rishonim different interpretations of what it means, practically speaking. And one could actually suggest that it parallels, in a sense, Tarakim Law. Right? If I'm going to tell you right now that the sky is green, so it's not true, but that's not a crime. You can't go to jail for lying, for saying something is false. When can you go to jail? When are you committing a crime by lying? So under oath, perjury is one such example. Or another one would be fraud. If I cause you a loss of money through my lying, if I defraud you, so that's a crime. So you find both possibilities within halacha as well. There are some who suggest that as an absolute prohibition, Mitzvar Sheker Tirchak is akin to perjury. It means in Bezdin, in the formal setting. The Gemara is in the middle of Maseches Shavuos, have a number of drushas on the Pasuk, Mitzvar Sheker Tirchak. They're all in a Bezdin context. Or alternatively, you have some of the Rishonim, such as the Sefer Yireim, who maintain that the prohibition is when you hurt someone through lying. It's an issur ben adam l'chaveiro. If you cause somebody a loss, if you defraud someone, or you cause someone some other type of negative consequence through lying, so then that's a prohibition of midvar sheker tirchak. But simply say something that's not true, there are other reasons not to do that. And again, we said the seal of God is truth. And we have other psukim exhorting us to be truthful all the time, but as an absolute prohibition, perhaps we don't necessarily apply Mitzvah Sheker Tirchak. And especially if it's not just a neutral law, but it's constructive instead of destructive, if it actually helps, so then maybe a case could be made that this is not, strictly speaking, subject to a prohibition. So if that's the case, so then we don't necessarily have a values clash here. It's not necessarily that we have to struggle between truth and peace and decide which one we're going to sacrifice for the other. But maybe it's not much of a contest, because maybe we don't really have an absolute prohibition of sheker. We do have an absolute mandate of keeping the peace. That there's many different psukim that are candidates for the source, but it's clearly a mandate to keep the peace. So if that's the case, it's not much of a contest. You have to keep the peace. There isn't really an isser of sheker in this case. So why should you not do it? Mitzvah l'shanus v'fnei Hashem. So that gives us basically two ways to look at this question. Should we say there's a values clash and we're compromising one for the other? Or should we say it's not really a clash, that essentially this is not sheker, it's not ideal, but compared to shalom, it's not much of a contest. Aisa.
Second approach is extremely subjective.
Of course, yeah.
And therefore, you're taking a halacha and possibly bending it totally out of shape based on personal situation and personal decision.
But almost everything is. It's a little disheartening sometimes.
Not usually the individual who could decide halacha in terms of when I can do it, when I can't.
We'd be surprised. Right, you'd be surprised. Yeah.
Of course we do.
Right, shooting somebody could either be murder or self-defense or a heroic act of war, and it depends on your assessment of the situation. You know, Lashon Hara could either be prohibited or could be toelis. It's all going to go down to your interpretation of the situation. So it's a little scary, but it does seem to tend to boil down. Some of the Sfarim write that the Rambam puts all of these halachas in what he calls Hilchos Deis. And some suggest that the phrase Hilchos Deis has to do with the fact that a lot of these halachas are given to our subjective interpretation of the situation. And whether it will be usur or a mitzvah will depend on how we read the facts. So it's possible that it's true.
Very much case by case.
Yeah, could be.
Even Hilchos Shabbos depends on a lot of it on Kavanah.
Right, that's true also, but especially dealing in this area of halacha, it's very possibly the case. Hi.
This is found in the Shabbos on Daf Nun Hey, the bottom line of the Daf of Arala, which is an immutable number. But you also find the Sanhedrin Samach Dalid in the Gemara, which is immutable since it's in 4:10. So the Gemara, Daf Nun Dalid in the Shabbos, how the Gemara, we learned there about Taita Taita, the Lashonim, and it's a different person, that left the Mishnah to the Gemara, because they didn't give the Taita a strong share. So Perek Yud Zayin, so is this sort of like a barometer for the crystallizational circumstance of the mitzvah of Teichach?
It's a good question. We'll have to see a little bit more of the facts and see how it fits in. Let's try to get some more details in and see how it maybe paints a little bit of a broader picture. So we'll just try to get some more details out, and we'll see if we can see if some of the questions will perhaps be addressed. So in any event, so these two possibilities, whether we're talking about a values clash or we're talking about essentially not a values clash, but that this is not a prohibition of sheker, this could affect a number of questions, including the question that we dealt with at the very beginning, in terms of is it mutter or is it a mitzvah? Basically, is it a judgment call that you could decide how to balance these two and what's your priority right now? Or should we say that your directive really is l'sharon sifnei hashalom, but it's essentially a mitzvah? So this is a question which really was dealt with by the Rishonim. The Gemara Maseches Bava Metzia, Shiva learned Bava Metzia last year, so in the second paragraph of Bava Metzia, so the Gemara tells us about the halacha that one is required when one returns property. If you have lost property that belongs to somebody else, so you have to return it, but you have to be careful you're turning it to the right person. You have to ask for simon, and you have to make sure the person who's asking for it really does own it. So the Gemara says that nonetheless, if the person who you're dealing with is a Talmud Chacham, which ideally means he's somebody who tells the truth, he's an honest person, so then, the definition is, he's not Mishane B'diburo, he doesn't change the truth. So then, such a person can get his property back B'tfiyas Ayin. He can look at the item, he can say, yeah, that's mine, you can give it back to him. So the Gemara in that context says that there are three areas where a person can change the truth, and it won't hurt his reputation. He's still going to be considered an honest person, and you'll still give him back property based on his say-so. So the three areas, the Gemara says that there's Ushpiza, that if somebody was given a great steak dinner by his friend, and everyone's wondering why you're so happy, where did you get the great steak from, and you know if you tell everybody they're going to besiege this person, so as a chesed to your host, you don't want to tell the truth, so then okay, that's acceptable, that's fine. Another example the Gemara gives is Masechta, which sounds like it's an issue of modesty. It sounds like that if somebody is asking you, and did you learn all the shas? You can tell them, no, only half the shas. You can tell them that your learning is less than it actually is. You shouldn't say more than it actually is. That's the whole discussion in the Yerushalmi and Makis. That's a bigger problem. But play things on. So that's acceptable. It sounds like that's a modesty factor. And then the Gemara gives a third example, Puria, which literally translates as bed. Sounds like it refers to the marital relationship. It's not anybody's business. Somebody asks you questions, you're not obligated to answer honestly about that. The Maharsha has a famous interpretation there where he says it's actually a reference to Purim, like Chayiv Inishlu B'Sumei B'Puria, and it's about whether you got drunk on Purim or not. That's also an interesting interpretation. Whatever it is, the Gemara has these three examples where a person can say something not true and he won't necessarily be perceived as a dishonest person. So the Rishon and the Rush, the Rif, others ask, isn't something missing from the list? What about Shalom? Aren't we permitted to lie if they have Shalom? Satosis and a few others say that's not missing from the list, that is the list, that all of these cases are examples of Shalom. But if you're going to tell people who gave you a great steak dinner and everyone's going to knock down his door, so then that's going to impact on Shalom. Even the Masechta, I remember hearing once, and I heard Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zechasadik Levracha, speak in Teaneck, and he was given a big introduction, as you'd expect, and he started off after the introduction with a story. He told the story about his grandfather, Reb Chaim Brisker, that Reb Chaim Brisker had a policy that if he didn't want to get into a fight with someone, so he would say to that person, I didn't learn that Masechta. So it was a way of staying out of the fight. So he had another relative who was less well known, and that his policy was to do the same thing. He'd also say, I didn't learn that Masechta. So the father of Reb Chaim, the Beis Halevi, said to this other relative, he said, that policy that you have, sorry? Right. He said that that policy that you have of not saying, of saying that you didn't learn the Masechta, so you shouldn't do that. So the relative said, but Chaim does it, you don't stop in. So the Beis Halevi said, yeah, but when you do it, they'll believe you. So shouldn't say that. So then Rav Aaron went on to say that he didn't want to argue in the introduction the rabbi had given him because he was afraid people would believe him. That wasn't such a
concern.
Right, that wasn't such a concern. So the point of the story is that you see, like Tosus, Rav Chaim understood that's all of Mipnei Shalom. The Masechta is also not necessarily about modesty, it's an example of Mipnei Shalom. But other Rishonim give a different answer. Other Rishonim say that no, Shalom's not listed here because these are optional examples. These are cases where a person can voluntarily decide to say something not true and it won't hurt his reputation. But Shalom, that's a mitzvah. So I need the Gemara to tell me that if I fulfill a mitzvah kedid, it won't make me a dishonest person? Clearly not. That's the halacha. So therefore, since that's a mitzvah, the Gemara doesn't have to list that in this category. So those Rishonim paskin like that it's a mitzvah. Well, from the Rambam, it doesn't sound like that. The Rambam sounds like this is more of a option. It's midas talmid chachamim to talk like this. And the suggestion seems to be that you have this debate here, that the Rishonim who say it's a mitzvah seem to understand that there really isn't an issue of sheker at all. So if there's no problem of sheker, so why should you not go for Shalom as the director? While perhaps the Rambam might understand that really there is a struggle here. There is a little bit of a clash between Shalom and Emes. So it's acceptable to decide with your discretion that this is a time for Shalom, but it's also acceptable not to. And this could also affect the question of how blatant a lie can you say. So as we said at the outset, we weren't 100% sure how to translate Lishanos. That to translate it as lie may not be accurate because that's really Lishaker. And Lishanos, it sounds like an attempt to soften it. That it shouldn't really be a blatant black and white lie, but it should be a shinoi, should be a little bit of a fudging. And if you look at the Rishonim and Vayera, we talk about the pasuk about Avraham and Sarah, you find that some of them understand that that was also more of a fudging, a false statement. You find this discussion in a few places, And it could be, this is also the same question, that is it that is no Isser Sheker here at all? So say whatever you have to say. Or should we say, really there is an Isser Sheker? So we don't want you to actually say something completely false. We'll have a different standard of honesty than we would, let's say, in a business dealing where you'd have to be completely forthcoming. Here you could leave out stuff, you could add a little bit, you could change things a little bit, but to actually lie, perhaps we're not so into that. And the Chafetz Chaim in his Sefer, so he thought that Lamaisa, strictly speaking, it's permissible to lie blatantly if necessary, Laman HaShalom, but because it's a question, preferable to try to avoid actual lying if it's possible to get the same result without saying something overtly false, that would definitely be preferable. This could also affect a few other questions. That there is a more famous discussion of this really in the Mishnah in Ksubas, but it's not as famous as it should be. It's only half famous. Half the Mishnah in Ksubas is famous. That if you've ever been to a Jewish wedding, so you've heard the question, Ketzad Meraktim Lifnei Hakala. Right, so, but you only know half the Mishnah if that's all you hear, because at the wedding they say, Ketzad Meraktim Lifnei Hakala, Kala Nova Chasuda. She's a beautiful bride. And they never tell you, for some reason, the band, they never sing the other half of the Mishnah, that it's actually a machlokas. That Beis Shammai wasn't so sure he should say that. So that was Beis Hillel's opinion. Beis Hillel says, Kalandav Chatzuta. And Beis Shammai's opinion was, hold on a second. What if you're not so impressed? What if you don't really think so? So then, don't we say, Midvar Sheker Tirchak, an interesting application outside of Bezdin according to Beis Shammai? And don't we say that you have to tell the truth? So says Beis Shammai, Kala Kamoshi, which hopefully does not mean that you sing ugly Kala. It means that you say something you can get behind. You say, willing to go out with him, willing, you know, something that something that has some truth to it. Right. So the question is, what's with Beis Shammai's position? Beis Shammai is firmer than God? Right. There's no opinion. We saw first the Gemara and Yevamos that has three opinions on this issue. And no opinion says that you're not allowed to lie with Nehash Shalom. We have Mutter, Mitzvah, and even God himself does this. So where does Beis Shammai fall on the spectrum? They're firmer than God? They don't believe that it's Mutter L'shanis of Nehash Shalom, even with all those sources? So there is a discussion about this in many places. There's a beautiful sefer from a Rav from Baltimore, Yitzchak Sternhill, called Kochve Yitzchak, where he has an interpretation along the following lines. It doesn't say it exactly this way, we're paraphrasing. But it says that Beis Shammai lived a long time ago before they had video cameras. So what's the difference? Because when Beis Shammai, when the students of Beis Shammai went to a wedding, nobody came up to them in the middle of a wedding with a video camera and said, "Nu, what do you think of the Kal?" So if that happens, so Beis Shammai would agree, "Oh, Kal Nov Chasuda, for sure," they'd say whatever they had to say. But if no one's coming and asking, so then who asks you to jump in the middle of the circle and start screaming something you don't believe? If you believe it, okay, fine, says Beis Shammai, but if you don't believe it and no one's coming up to you with a video camera, so then why do you have to yell out something you don't believe in? So if that's the position of Beis Shammai, so then what's the position of Beis Hillel? Apparently that even if no one's forcing you to say anything, you can take a proactive measure in favor of Shalom, a preemptive strike. Even if you're not pushed up against the wall, you can say something that's not 100% your position in order to bolster Shalom even when it's not being threatened. So what you seem to have here perhaps are the same two possibilities. That perhaps Beis Shammai believes that you have a struggle between peace and truth, and if you have to sacrifice truth for peace, it's permissible. But if you don't absolutely have to, so then why should you? So then why don't you just stay quiet and not compromise either value. And Beis Hillel perhaps believes that you don't really have much of a clash here. This would not be an example of Sheker at all. This wouldn't be prohibited. So since it will increase Shalom, why not do it? Therefore it's advisable, even though it's not 100% objectively factual.
I think it also might be that Beis Hillel are simply explaining what the statement is.
What the word means. The Rishonim, yeah, some of the Rishonim say like that.
He thinks she's great, because he's marrying
her,
obviously.
It's subjective, right. So that's, some of the Rishonim say like that, and that's a whole discussion of what exactly that means. There's a little bit more to say about that, but broadly speaking, it seems like this might be a viable approach. You could find this behind a few other debates as well. For example, There is a discussion that came out a few years ago with volumes of Rav Kook's writings on the Gemara. I think Rabbi Chalap was involved with these volumes called Tov Roi, where they collected Rav Kook's writings and put it on the order of the Masechta. So if you look on this Mishnah in Ksubas, so there is a machlokas between Rav Kook and an anonymous Talmud Chacham on the following point. Now we know the Rambam advocates that one should always go for the Derech HaMu'etzes, for the golden mean, for the middle path. Shouldn't be too extreme in any midah, one way or the other. But we also have a notion, as the Vilna Gaon discussed, that if one is currently at a certain extreme where he doesn't want to be, so then it could be appropriate to go to the other extreme in order to balance out in the middle. So in that context, this anonymous Talmud Chacham said that this notion of mutter l'shanos b'fnei hashalom, so who is this addressed to? This is addressed to the average person who tries to tell the truth most of the time, tries to be honest regularly. Once in a while he gets stuck in a situation where he has to say something that's not true to keep the peace. Okay, it's permissible. But if you have someone who has an issue with honesty, he has tilted too much towards dishonesty and needs to fix that, so then such a person needs to go to the extreme of honesty. And therefore, a person in that position should not change anything, even Laman HaShalom. And Rav Kook disagreed. Rav Kook said, you want to go on your self-improvement program, so do that on your own time. But here, you have a mitzvah, you have an obligation of Shalom, you don't have the right to sacrifice this mitzvah for the sake of your seeking greater honesty. So perhaps again you have the same issue, that the anonymous Talmud Chacham felt there is a struggle here between the midos of Shalom and Emes, and therefore the average person who has things in balance in general, so he's allowed to have this discretion. But somebody who has sacrificed Emes too often, somebody who is already lacking in the midos of Emes, he doesn't have the right to make this balance and to say that he will once again compromise the Laman HaShalom. He has to emphasize Emes. And Rav Kook perhaps thought there isn't a clash here at all. There's just a mitzvah to make Shalom. And therefore, the fact that you want to work on your midos of Emes, that's not an exemption from this mitzvah. You'll do that when you don't have a situation of Shalom, but here there's an obligation, and that's what you have to do. You could find this issue represented in a few other places. For example, in the Tshuvas Yad Eliyahu, he maintained that this heter is only meant for occasional usage. Comes up once in a while, okay, so one can be Mishanim Pnei HaShalom. But if one is in a situation where he's going to have to do this every day, all the time, he's constantly going to have to sacrifice Emes for the sake of Shalom, so then things will get too far out of balance, and that's a problem. So apparently this position reflects the position that you have a clash here between these two values. You're balancing one against the other. And therefore it can't be done too often because then it will get out of balance. So also...
Eliyahu of Lublin?
Oh, okay. That's an older sefer. Yeah. So there is
they said more about the Gemara whose wife always did the opposite.
Of whatever he asked, if he would regularly say
to
him. Regularly ask him instead of what he wanted, why he wanted it to get the right. So that's it's relevant. Yes, that's like you have it happen every day. So then maybe that's too much of a sacrifice. There was also, I say was because I can't find it anymore, but there was a comment to the Chassam Sofer once upon a time on the Gemara Masechta Shabbos. I looked for it more recently, I couldn't find it, but I'll say Lama HaShalom that it was there. So if you look it up, you may not find it, but I remember once upon a time seeing that the Chassam Sofer, his commentary to Masechta Shabbos, had a comment that we have a halacha that when one is wearing tefillin, so one has to maintain a clean body. So the Chassam Sofer argued that it doesn't just mean clean physically, but it means clean spiritually as well. So what does that mean? He says it means you shouldn't tell lies while wearing tefillin. You shouldn't tell lies when not wearing tefillin also, probably. So then he goes on to say that even the Laman HaShalom, one should not be Mishana while wearing tefillin. So that position seems to say that it is sheker. It's permitted sheker. It's maybe necessary, but it's still offensive to tefillin. That if it was purely nothing, it wasn't problematic at all, wouldn't seem to be a problem. Apparently what he's saying is that it's sheker that we allow because of the exigencies of the circumstance, but this is still an offense of the tefillin because it is a lack of complete purity. So if somebody comes over to you and says, what do you think of my speech last night? And you're wearing tefillin, so you say, hold on a second.
And I hope you have learned that that's
right. Right.
Right. You say new.
Or somebody suggested once that you could say that you're makbid not to talk with tefillin on. And then the question is that really true or not? Would that be in the shot of the Nashon? And the rest of your life, you have to be makbid not to talk with tefillin on. And then at that point, Don, you're thinking that.
Chafetz Chaim says you can't be nishba, though, for this. Even though you can be mutar l'shanas from Bnei Hashon, but it doesn't include shvua.
Because that would go back to the perjury issue. You know, that if you say that might actually be a violation of mitvar sheker tichlik, that saying the sky is green might not be a violation, but going under oath and saying the sky is green, that might be a violation.
So that means that there are two levels of mitvar sheker tichlik. There's one...
Or that the other one is not really a prohibition. Is that the prohibition... What's a subject to debate to begin with, but that we're more absolutely sure that there's a prohibition in that Torah if one's under oath, but if one's not under oath, then it's not necessary.
No, but there's but the MS trumps Shalom in that case.
Correct, because then maybe you have a real Isser. And maybe if the whole position is you don't necessarily have a real prohibition, so then maybe it comes out a little differently. So this could affect a number of other questions, and we'll just mention one or two others in the interest of time, but there is a fascinating position of the Sefer Chasidim, which is quoted in the Magen Avraham. So the Magen Avraham is a very authoritative source, although I don't think the Sefer Chasidim is actually accepted lahalacha. Later Sfarim argue why they don't agree with the Sefer Chasidim, but it is brought in the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham is in Kufnun Vav, Hilchas Masu Matan and Arachayim. It's a very long Magen Avraham. It's so long they wouldn't put it on the Mar Makom Mishira. I asked them to put it on. They said it was too long to put it on. But he quotes all the halachas which don't show up anywhere else in the Shulchan Aruch. It says all the halachas that the Gemara has that they can't figure out where to put them. So he puts it all in Siman Kuf Nun Vav. So he discusses there this issue of Lashanas of Neha Shalom. And he quotes from the Sefer Chasidim the following ruling. That here we know in the neighborhood, sometimes you'll walk in the streets and people will approach you and ask you for money. So often, many people have a minig that when they're asked for money, they respond, no, I don't have any money. Even though it may not be technically true. But they've decided that it's probably preferable to say I don't have any money than the alternative, which is say, you know, it's funny you should ask. I actually have a lot of money in my pocket, but I have no interest in giving it to you because I don't trust you or like you. So I won't be doing that. So most people have decided that's probably preferable, Neha Shalom, to simply say, I don't have any money. And it's probably true. That probably is the case of Lashanas of Neha Shalom. But the Sefer Chasidim seems to say that he doesn't think that that's acceptable. Because he says a chiddush in this whole concept of Lashanas of Nehasham. And he says that the notion is one is allowed to be Mashana about things in the past. But things in the present or in the future, one is not permitted to misrepresent. So there's a lot of discussion about this. Where did he get this from? What does it mean? How does it work with some of the examples that we've talked about? There are commentaries in the Sefer Chasidim. Most of the Rav Kook Sefer Chasidim have commentaries from Reuven Margolius and a few others, the Chidah. They all discuss what exactly is he getting at. And some suggest that perhaps Chazal are concerned, maybe this is an institution of Chazal, that they're worried that if we say we have too broad a definition of Neha Shalom, so that anything can be justified under that heading, as was pointed out. And therefore, perhaps we have to keep it very restricted, so only things that are in the past. So then, for example, when these Mefarshim ask, so what about the Masechta? It doesn't sound like that's in the past. So they say, well, that's Mishum Modesty, and modesty is also a justification. This whole discussion, how to figure out what exactly the Sefer Chasidim is getting at, and how it fits with things that we've seen so far. Perhaps it's possible to suggest that maybe what the Sefer Chasidim is getting at is as follows. That maybe the Sefer Chasidim believes that really we do have a clash here between the values of MS and the value of Shalom. And if that's the case, so then if you have such a clash, so then, yes, if you're forced to, you're going to pick Shalom. If you only have two choices, it's either compromise Shalom or compromise Emes, so you will compromise Emes and you'll pick Shalom. But if there's at all a third possibility, then perhaps we're going to be told, go for that third possibility and don't compromise either value. So in this situation, somebody's asking you for money, you really have three choices. You could lie and say, I don't have any money. You could start a fight and say, I have so much money, you're not getting any of it. Or you could give them the money, which is not necessarily a desirable option. But maybe the Sefer Chassidim is saying that the third option, which doesn't mean compromising either value, is preferable, and we should only say L'shanus of Nehashalom when you only have these two choices. And if that's the case, when he talks about the past versus the present and the future, so perhaps what he means is that if the facts are set in stone, because this is something that's about the past and you can't do anything to address it, so then, okay, your only way to deal with the situation is to be Mishanif Nehashal. But if you do have some influence over the facts, it's something that's going on in the present or the future, so then better to exert that influence over the circumstances rather than to sacrifice either Emes or Shalom. Hi.
How about the situation where the Jews unfortunately found themselves in during the Inquisition? Some Jews chose martyrdom and some chose to divide as Marauders.
Yeah, that gets into a whole other discussion because that's definitely going to be beyond today's topic, but that involves issues of Yehari Bal Yavor and central issues of faith and questions of idolatry. It opens up a whole other discussion. It's really here we're just talking about if you're going to create the tension by saying something, so then maybe you can go around that tension by saying something false. Normally, if a situation was threat of life, you should be able to lie straight out and be Mechal Shabbos and do all kinds. Right, because there the issue was it wasn't just a normal Avera, it was a question of idolatry, a question of Yehari Bal Yavor. It's a whole other realm of halacha, which really draws on a whole different discussion. So for now, we'll treat that as a different discussion. But perhaps we're almost going to run out of time, so we'll just mention one last idea that we said before, that there are a whole range of interpretations of why the Torah says Midbar Sheker Tircha. Why does it say stay far away instead of a more conventional language of don't? And there was a suggestion by the Lutzker Rav, Zalman Sarotskin, in his Sefer Oznayim Torah, where he says as follows. He says that we recognize that we can't say, in an absolute sense, never lie, because there are circumstances when you have to lie. There are situations like Min HaShalom, where one will have to say something that's not true. So it wouldn't be appropriate to say, never lie. But we can say the following. We can say that one should take whatever care possible to try to arrange his life so that the conflicts between Emes and Shalom are going to be very few and far between. And you don't have total control, so you can't say you'll make sure it never happens. But one should not be casual about this trade-off. One should value these two principles of Emes and Shalom with such great esteem so that he will do whatever he can to make sure it's unlikely, it's very rare, that there'll be a conflict between the two scenarios. If it happens, if there is a conflict, so then we know Mutar L'shan Sufnei HaShalom. But the Torah says, Midvar Sheker Tirchak, try to stay far away from those situations. Try to do whatever you can to show enough concern and care for these two values so that to whatever extent it's in your control, you will be able to esteem both of them and there won't be any trade-off, there won't be any conflict. And perhaps that's the message for this week. We have so far a few days to hopefully stave off a fast before Sar B'Tevis on a Friday. So if we could bring about the Mashiach before then, so then we'll be saved from Friday fast. So that's what the Pasuk says in Zechariah. The Pasuk says that the fast days will ultimately be L'Sasson L'Simcha, will be holidays. So the Gemara asks, okay, so great, when's that going to happen? We want to get out of this fast on a Friday, when's it going to happen? So look at the end of the Pasuk. The Pasuk says, V'ha Emes, V'ha Shalom Mehavu. If we have enough love for both Emes and Shalom, if we revere these two pillars with enough consideration, enough care, then perhaps we'll be able to bring about a situation when there will be a total geula and when these fast days will indeed be holidays, Ken Yehi Ratzon. So just quickly review what we spoke about. And I think we're almost out of time, but we spoke about this question of the Gemara in Yevamos, which says the three positions about Shina Gifnei HaShalom, each with its own proof. The Gemara, the first opinion of Nassim's opinion, is that it's mutter, based on what we read in this week's parsha about Yosef and his brothers. The second opinion says it's a mitzvah, based on the story about Shaul and Shmuel and David HaMelech. And the third position is Afakar Baruch Hu Atzmo, also came that even God does this, as we see with the discussion with Avram and Sarah. Then we posed the question, what happened to honesty is the best policy? And we saw two basic ways to understand it. We could either say that based on that pasuk in Zechariah, Emes V'Shalom Ahavo, the two great pillars of Judaism are truth and peace. So if you have a clash between these two principles, if it's 50-50, then you could choose either one. That's the position of Mutter L'Shana Sofei HaShalom. And the position of Mitzvah L'Shana Sofei HaShalom says it's not really equal, that Shalom is more important than Emes. And we talked a little bit about that question of how you decide which one's more important, which one's less important. But perhaps that's the issue, Shalom wins in this clash. Or alternatively, we could say it's not really a clash at all. And we could say that essentially there's no Isser of Sheker in this case. We talked about what Midvar Sheker Terchak means. We mentioned the view of the Urayim, that Sheker as an Isser of Midvar Sheker Terchak is only when it's harmful to somebody. If it's constructive, so then perhaps there is no Isser. So if that's the case, there's no value clash, and Shalom wins, then Mitzvah L'Shana. So we considered the question of what's the psak in this question of Mitzvah or Mutter. We saw that the Gemara in Bava Metzia gave these three examples where one is permitted to lie without hurting his reputation, and the Rishonim say, well, what about Shalom? Why is that not on the list? And we saw Tosfos's view that it is the whole list. And other Rishonim would say Shalom's not on the list because Shalom is a mitzvah and these are voluntary, so we don't have to be told that the mitzvah is not going to hurt our reputation. And the Rambam seems to see it more as optional, so that could perhaps reflect this machlokas. And included as well is the question of how blatant a lie can you do? Can you lie straight out? Or like the Rambam also indicates, should it be somewhat of a compromise of the truth but not an actual sheker? And the Chafetz Chaim says that lemaisa, if you have to lie, you can, but ideally you'll try to just say something that's a little bit fudged. And then we saw also the Mishnah of Kalanav Chasud, the Machlokas Beisil and Beishamai, and the question is, what is Beishamai's view if all the opinions of the Gemara say it's Mutter? So perhaps, as the Koch of Yitzchak suggests, that Beishamai is saying, when you're absolutely forced to say something, okay, so then you can Mishafnei HaShalom, but if you're not forced, don't volunteer anything. And Beisil's position is apparently that you can do a proactive strike in favor of Shalom, and that's perhaps a different way of seeing things. Then we saw also the Machlokas Rav Kook and the anonymous Talmud Chacham about if somebody's working on their Midas HaEmes, are they still able to use this Heter Mishafnei HaShalom? That the anonymous Chacham said no, and Rav Kook said, what are you talking about? It's a mitzvah, you don't have the option to opt out of it. And then we saw also the position of the Yad Eliyahu, that one who is regularly in the situation should not be Mishanim, even Mishnei HaShalom. And the Chassam Sofer's opinion somewhere that wearing tefillin is an offense to tefillin. If one is Mishani from Hashalom, apparently it is still a Chefza Shel Sheker, so to speak. It's still offensive to the tefillin, and that says something about it as well. And then we saw the position of Sefer Chassidim that one should not lie, for example, and say he doesn't have money when somebody asks him for it, and one should not lie anything that's in the present or the future. It's limited to the past, and we discussed a little bit the debate about that. What's it based on? Where does it come from? And how does it reconcile with the other makoros that we've seen? And we suggested that what he means is that it's only an option to be Mishana if those are your only two choices, to compromise Shalom or to compromise Emes. But if there's a third option, perhaps we tell you always try to take the third option and not compromise either value. And then we mentioned the pshat of the Lipska Rav in the idea of Midvar Sheker Tirchak, that the Torah uses that language because it recognizes the fact that sometimes we will have to be Mishani, we'll have to be Mishaker, but we should care about both values so much that we will try to set up our life that those opportunities are few and far between, and therefore the language is Tirchak, stay far away from it. Then it was our hope that with that mentality we should be able to fulfill the value of the Pasuk in Zechariah of Emes V'Shalom Ahavu, which ties back to the first part of the Pasuk, that the fast days, including the one that's meant to be observed this week, should ultimately be L'sasa and L'simcha. Wish everyone a wonderful day, a wonderful week.
Did you search us?
How long are you? Yeah, maybe I'll come on.